I'm so excited to talk about this episode.
Yeah, me too.
Well, okay, we'll start. As you know, this is The Measure of an Episode, where it is our continuing mission to explore what makes Star Trek genuine Star Trek, and not just television. Not just television with Star Trek decals on it. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jonathan, and we do this with three objective, check it off the list, yes or no criteria. One, is there sci-fi intricately woven into the plot? It cannot be extricated without the plot being completely rewritten. Two, is that sci-fi presented in a unique or novel fashion and not just a sci-fi trope that we have seen dozens of times elsewhere? And three, is there a character that faces a moral or ethical dilemma? Does not have to be a main character, just a character who is tumultuously considering something. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Paul. And this week we watched Lower Decks, Season 4, Episode 6, For Angie's Heart Place. The Cerritos visits the Fang homeworld.
Oh.
See, there's not fun anymore.
It's not no,
fun
anymore. I know. There's not enough detail. Yeah. Speaking of detail and blurbs, Prodigy has been picked up by Netflix, which means there is a chance that we start will start getting Netflix blurbs again.
All yep. right. Yeah. They called up the guy who was covered in Doritos.
You're rehired.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited. That's very exciting.
Or he's got like a Dick Tracy watch. It's just beep, 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 beep. I'm on my way.
We don't know why you keep having us call you on this thing. It doesn't work most of the time. Okay, so I want to ask you a question about this episode.
You seem reluctant to ask. Hang on. I just whacked my microphone really hard. Okay, try that again.
Was it misbehaving?
Not anymore, it's not.
I want to know, do you find the Ferengi interesting? Not necessarily just in this episode, but in general, you know.
Oh, boy. Short answer, yes, but it takes a lot.
Oh, with a long answer, me.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Because you know I'm going to ask that every single time you say short answer.
I know.
From now on.
All right.
Yeah, so here's the thing. So I remember the first time the Ferengi make an appearance, at least in Next Gen. I don't know if they're in earlier shit. But they were just these weird kind of monster, dumb, like the whole thing about them being hyper-fixated on profit, and mm-hmm. that's where they're culturalized, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I don't think was a thing when they first came on Next Gen. I think it was more they were just a weird-looking alien, you know? And so I'm thinking about, now that they've extrapolated that race to where we are now, which is sort of almost a stereotypical thing about Ferengi. It's almost like the same idea as Klingon, where you can't all be these bloodthirsty warrior types of people. You'd have never made it past, like you've never developed warp engines,
right?
We've had that discussion. Same thing, it seems like, with the Ferengi, although when you think of capitalism, then maybe someone thought they could make a lot of money by developing interstellar travel. So maybe it's a little bit more
Yeah, but I mean, even plausible. There, like you would have to take so many steps. Like that would have to be a family business of long-term profits to try to justify that work of space travel specifically for the profits.
Right. And no, there's been no character who is Ferengi who shows any kind of idealism or altruism or inspiration beyond making money. And I think you would need that because if you were to make the comparison to humans, yes, are very capitalistic in nature. You know, we want things. We want to buy things because they bring us things.
Yep. With you so far. Yep.
Yeah. Logic checks out so far. But there is still that element of curiosity and the pursuit of science. So I just wonder, like, is it getting to the point of Klingons where it just doesn't make sense? Like, where are the people? I mean, I guess we got one Ferengi who was a little bit more well-rounded, and that was Mariner's friend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was kind of nice. That was a little bit more interesting. They didn't explore it at all. He could have been anybody, I guess. Mm-hmm. But
well, it was nice because it was the same Ferengi that she used like in one of the season one episodes. And then at the end of the episode, kind of what we had with like the junior grade hazing, like we saw her talking to this friend that we just saw again, basically saying, you know, thanks so much for being a stereotypical Ferengi. And, you know, and he's like, you know, we're not all like that. And she's like, oh, I know.
Right. Oh, well, that's nice that they did that. Thanks for shitting on my point.
But it's still the same point. Like, yes, he says that, but this planet is all about profit.
It just starts to get a little old and predictable. I mean, it's funny in the sense that they're playing off, they're bouncing jokes off of that stereotype now. But how much of that can you do? I mean, it was fun to see kind of the how far they're willing to take it. Like if you defraud the Ferengi, how serious they take that. Like they imprison you to a work camp forever for your entire life. If you try and save 5%, you know? So I like that idea. I mean, but you can only do that once. No, now they've done it. And so I don't know. I want there to be some other aspect. Like I was kind of excited about seeing the world a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know if they were saying that the entire planet is kind of like Vegas, because I got a big Vegas vibe.
Oh, totally. Yeah. This. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if this was just a city.
Yeah.
And it's unclear.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say to that. Like they didn't show enough, because they said like we're going to Ferenginar and we're putting together the tour guide, but they kind of left it at that. And like they kind of implied that it wasn't the whole planet, just because they gave them like what, 2 days, 3 days to go do everything?
Everything. Yeah. It must have been just a city.
Yeah. Must have been. Maybe Ferenginar is the capital of Ferengi.
That kind of speaks to how Star Trek deals with other races, and that they're typically monocultural, mm-hmm, and monotheistic. Just sort of, there's no diversity at all. It's always, this is how everybody is on the planet.
Right.
You know? So I understand it makes it more easy. More easy? Easier. Yeah. Yeah.
Both work. Well, yeah. And one of the things, I mean, we have a single planet? Like what?
Yeah, we do. That's right.
You're right. Thanks. Yeah. No, like after space travel happens and we realize that the universe is a lot bigger than us, we all come together and it's not the United Federation like on Earth. Like, the United Federation of Planets is on Earth, but Earth like becomes united, you know?
Yeah. It's a part of a bigger community.
Yeah. And so I kind of feel like maybe that's where the monoculture comes from. Like it's just kind of the dominant culture. But I mean, regardless of that, there's no way that they would be able to explore the entire planet.
No. I mean, they could. They would just take them a little while. It's sort of like when you backpack through Europe. You know, it might take you a couple of months or something like that to go explore most of the planet. Because you can beam around. Like a lot of your, when you backpack through Europe, a lot of it is walking.
Right.
So you take out the walking, you can just beam anywhere. You can probably get it done in a much less time.
That's true.
But point being, it seems that whenever they encounter a new society or a new planet or whatever it happens to be, a civilization, they tend to be the same. They all dress the same. They all kind of have the same beliefs. I understand that it simplifies things in order to move along the plot a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a thing that Star Trek does that sometimes backfires on them.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know if I find the Ferengi interesting at this point. I mean, I guess the most interesting part was the opening where they have the peanut butter hamper thing, which we've now decided is peanut butter hamper, even though maybe it's not.
Still hasn't been confirmed. Yeah. Yeah. But
yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I do wonder, because now we're getting that there are some who have been communicating with whomever is driving that ship.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the Ferengi supposedly was making a deal with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of some kind. So there's something going on. And there seemed to be going wherever the Cerritos is going.
Unless like the next episode shows something where the ship they destroy is not completely annihilated. I hope that this ship is not on its way to quote unquote destroy the Cerritos. Because if that's the case, then like it's not a fight.
There's going to be something about it. Yeah, I agree. I mean, they do know about it now. It is weird though. The only difference in this is that in all of the other little vignettes of that ship destroying other cultures or sorry, other ships, they've kind of happened, the like the Klingons happened upon it, the Romulans happened upon it, and they're the aggressors. But in this one, the peanut butter hamper ship kind of seemed to be chasing down the Ferengi ship.
Yeah.
And the Ferengi wanted to get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So the other ship was attacking the Ferengi. So I wonder what's going on. Again, it's like not interesting enough at this point to really speculate on because we don't have any, they've not been giving us any.
Right. There's no new information. Yeah. Other than like they did actually communicate, but like that's still, that's nothing to speculate on.
Right.
We can try.
I mean, I like the idea that it's a peanut butter hamper.
I'm almost positive it is. Like I think that it is a mashup of kind of all of the technology things. I think it's a peanut butter hamper, whoever the Jeffrey Combs computer is, because we haven't seen that yet. Badgie, the Rutherford personality headset. Like I think all of these things have been collected to be this new supervillain.
Well, that'd be cool. Like some sort of like Power Ranger version of all those.
Captain Planet, yeah.
Yeah.
Voltron.
So it's raining on Ferenginar, and I think that's canon. Like it's always raining on Ferenginar. Because I remember something in DS9 where it was raining when they got there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yes, it was raining. And yes, it was raining on that episode. And I never even like considered that that's just the Ferenginar planet. It's always rainy.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, if that's a reference, because the only time we've seen the Ferenginar is because of that. Like, we don't know. I'm sure this is completely Googleable. Here's the thing about Googling stuff like that, though. Like, even when you go to the Wikipedia, the whatever it's called.
Memory Alpha, yeah.
Memory Alpha. Like, who's writing that? And what's the veracity? Like, is that coming from the people who conceived of the Ferengi and Ferenginar, et cetera? Or is that just somebody extrapolating and making something up for the sake of canon?
It's mainly the second one.
So it's just guys like you and me. Being mm-hmm. like, yeah, it sounds right.
Yeah, but it's also a very wiki style where, you know, the diehard fans are... They go in and make those corrections very quickly.
Right. It would be interesting if Memory Alpha had a button where you could go into super fan mode where it takes out all of the references that it's a television show and it just treats it like it's real.
Right.
I would actually turn that on.
Yeah.
I don't think, unless I was doing some sort of research where I needed to know who the actor was or something like that, but I don't want them breaking the fourth wall for Star Trek.
Right.
I want to go there and be like, what's happening?
Yeah.
Who is this person?
Exactly.
So there's something that I noticed, something else I noticed about the Ferengi is that, so you know with Quark, who was sort of our first real Ferengi that we met on DS9?
Who, by the way, is doing phenomenal for himself. Every like bar and location has something that...
I know. And his brother.
Right? Yeah.
So I thought it was very interesting that, so in when Armin Shimmerman, who plays Quark, to break the fourth wall, he's not a real person. He, you know, as you know, he had to wear a mouthpiece.
Armin Shimmerman's not a real person?
No, Quark.
Okay.
So he had to wear a mouthpiece to, you know, to make him, give him these terrible, sharp, disgusting teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he would speak, it would be a little bit, you know, a little bit lispy, I guess, because, you know, he can't talk.
Right.
But I like how now that is now canon, that all Ferengi speak like that.
Yeah.
that's just how Ferengi speak. They speak with a lisp.
Well, and what's interesting about that is that probably means that when they are recording, they do have to put in some kind of mouthpiece to give them that lisp.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like an affect. It sounds like they do it on purpose. It's funny.
Yeah.
I would love to see what it is.
Yeah.
Like, what are they putting? Like, it's just, they could be putting a pencil in their mouth or something like that, you know?
Speaking of Ferengi, though, I did really like, it's kind of an obvious joke, but I like the part where they say Grand Nagus and Rom is like, please call me Negus. And they're like, okay, Negus. He's like, Grand Negus.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand. Was he just having some fun with himself, or did I miss something? What am I missing?
Rom has always been portrayed as very dim. Yeah, as dim, but good at some things. You know, like he's not the smartest person in the room, but almost like an idiot savant. Like he's got some things that he is very good at. And so it seemed like it was kind of a front where he was playing up his idiocy for the negotiations. That was what
Which
I
he clearly was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure there were several episodes dedicated to the wedding and the build up to the wedding.
Right.
Cause they have nothing else to do on that show.
Mm-hmm. That actually would have been kind of fun if there was an episode where it was, again, just nothing. I mean, even worse than Star Trek, where like they, you know, they have like all the sci-fi stuff, but this would be Sisko and Bashir, or not Sisko, O'Brien and Bashir playing darts, Quark running the bar, Rom and Lita.
They bring a baseball. Yeah, they bring a baseball.
Yeah.
In this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was kind of funny like how he was almost an even bigger fan of baseball than Sisko was.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like the only outward expression of him liking baseball was that he had a ball that he never touched on his desk.
Right. Yeah. Other people would play with it to kind of show him how threatening they were.
Right. They like trying to take control, trying to show dominance mm-hmm. over Sisko by playing with his ball.
Yeah.
They would slap his ball, would you say?
They would. Yeah. Yeah. Hang on. What would that phrase even be? It would be je sens balayque, probably.
I don't know. If you're asking me, I don't know. I did not pay attention in French class.
Yeah. It's it's one of those things where like what or what's that in French is qu'est-ce que c'est, which is what is that, what that is.
Yeah. It's sort of like phrases that don't actually translate.
They make it overly complicated. I assume the phrase of this based on the placement of words is I slap the balls in me. And not, I slap my balls.
Well, and just the concept, like what is, it seemed like if you slap my balls, it would get my attention,
mm-hmm.
right? Like it's like, oh, that would perk my ears up
right.
quite a bit.
Yeah.
But it means it does nothing for me, you know? Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And that's been International Language Corner.
The language of love, which segues into Rutherford and Tendi.
Right. Yeah. Which was an interesting thing because I never quite came down on whether or not they were blushing and whether they were uncomfortable because they actually were kind of made to realize and to confront the fact that they have feelings for each other, or if they just don't and they're like, oh, this is weird that we're friends and we're being made to now do these things that I don't feel and you don't feel and we're just kind of friends. And so this just makes us uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the end kind of, I guess, makes that clear in a way because they love each other in their own context or in a specific context, not right. just anywhere, you know, mm-hmm. they have mm-hmm. to be doing those things.
Right. I don't know. Like I was hoping that there would be more revelations between the two of them, but like their open and honest confessions, which had to be open and honest, was just superficial stuff, you know, like, I think your hair looks good. Like,
yeah, I thought they were going to have some interesting back and forth about that. Like the writers were going to lead us down a path of, oh, they're making us say this stuff that we've always felt, but didn't have the balls to say.
Exactly.
But they didn't do that.
Yep. I did like how Freeman out Ferengied them. You know, she's like, well,
yeah, they, you know, as we've talked about in this particular situation, they needed her to be, not hapless and mm-hmm. incapable. Like she's actually a capable captain at this point.
Right. Yeah.
That was fun. It was fun to see how they were going to outsmart them since that guy basically handed over all of Starfleet to Nog.
I know.
That was funny. But the Mariner plot line, let's talk about that for a second.
Okay.
Because once again, it's the go-to Mariner plot line where she starts out and comes up with some reason to sabotage herself mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. other people. And at the end of it, one of her friends says, look what you're doing again. You're self-sabotaging. Maybe you should look inward. And she kind of looks to the side and realizes that she did it again. And so where are we going with this? What is this leading to something? Is this going to be, it kind of felt like they took a step closer
right,
to resolving this, but they need to do something because this is boring now.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I mean, it's funny the hijinks that they put her into sometimes. Like, it's fun to watch her be drunk and start fights and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's getting old, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. But also, it's kind of one of those things where maybe, well, yeah, like, let her grow, but still just enjoy doing those things. Like, she can be an adrenaline junkie and still have, like, not any rebellious side to her.
Or refocus that energy toward something productive. Give her a weird hobby. Or make her ambitious to be captain or something like that. Have somebody piss her off. She wants to take Ransom's job. By the way, I think that they're now seeding some sort of romance between Ransom and Mariner.
Oh, you think?
Yeah. Mm. Or at least that Ransom likes Mariner. Because there was that line where Mariner says, I don't know if this is weird that you're just always being nice. And then Ransom says, yeah, I'm handsome and nice. The great package. And then he leaves. It just feels like you wouldn't say that.
I mean, he's kind of like Riker exponentially. So, right. You know, he is very conceited. Like, he's constantly working out, and they've shown that a couple times. So it is possible that that's what was supposed to be. But I think it also, I may have been completely intentional to have been written in that kind of double entendre way.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Riker would just ask her out. He wouldn't start like testing the waters and, you know, selling himself.
Mm-hmm.
Riker selling himself is walking into a room.
All right. You know? Yeah.
Anyway, it seems like the proportions between ship and planet, a la our discussion about how those things never seem to quite add up because the planets should be way bigger than they appear to be when the Cerritos is orbiting them, or any ship in any of the Star Trek shows, there always seem to be, there's a proportion problem. Either they're very far away from the planet, or the planets are very small.
Right.
Either of which doesn't make sense.
Right.
And we decided that they're fudging it for the sake of the pretty shot.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like now the planets are very big and the ship is very small. So I will say that maybe they listen to this podcast.
Right. Yeah. No, and I would appreciate
made
that.
Some adjustments.
But I feel like also, as long as the planet is spinning, is that right? As long as we can see the planet rotating,
yeah,
then we are, the proportions are still too wrong.
If they're orbiting, you're not in geostationary orbit usually. At least it doesn't seem like they are. It seems like they're traveling around like any other orbit. It just takes less energy, I guess. In the live action shows, do we see the planet orbiting?
I don't know. I don't remember. I think usually it's just an establishing shot of the ship outside of the planet, and like they're both technically not moving. I wonder if like standard orbit is, if it's surveillance, like do they go in the opposite direction to, you know, cut their time in half?
I don't know. I know that if they're in geostationary, where they're just sitting above the planet at a fixed position, that is the hardest thing to do.
Right.
So they wouldn't just opt to do that. Unless they had a reason to. We have very little exploration into the orbital dynamics in Star Trek. I guess that's what we're learning
from
Lower Decks.
Which would actually be kind of fun, you know, not to like just have it be there, but to have some kind of plot where, kind of what you were saying, like they needed to pinpoint something on the planet. And that was something that they had a hard time doing just because of how precise it had to be.
Well, they kind of do that in Next Gen and in other shows as well, where they have to fire something at the planet's surface. Like they have to shoot a laser or there's tons of those.
Right.
And you couldn't do that while you were orbiting. Could you just draw a giant line? Or the angle of attack would differ. Like as you were traveling, right? It would be a different, like if you're drilling a hole, you wouldn't be able to drill a hole because you wouldn't have the right angle. So they'd have to go into it. They just don't say that they do.
Right.
I'm sure there's some throwaway line in one of those where we have to be in geostationary orbit, Captain.
I don't think I've ever heard that. That would actually be a pretty cool thing to say.
It'd be a cool thing to say, and it would make sense because if you're drilling a hole, you can't be moving.
Right.
As we all know.
Yeah. Well, kind of along those lines, like there was a hole that they were digging and they had to call it off because the hole was so small and so deep that they couldn't take all the equipment out and reinsert it into that hole.
Right. Yeah, I think it's miles at a certain point. There's like a whole thing about what's the deepest hole anybody's drilled in the outer crust of the... It's like nothing, too, unless you're the Enterprise. You can shoot lasers, shoot laser guns at the surface of the planet.
Yeah, and go as deep as they want.
Which seems like such a bad idea. Like, this must be a last resort problem. I think it normally is too. Like it's like going to erupt. There's this one episode where it's either going to nuke the planet or fix all the problems. It's like, well, that's convenient.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if we, to solve all of climate change, they just had to drill a hole into the, into the crust of the planet and that fixes everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't tried it.
That's true. Yeah. You want to know why? Because you can't be moving and drill a hole. And that's orbital mechanics, everybody.
Right. I've been Jonathan.
So anyway, I liked this episode better than the last one. But it's still kind of slapping my balls a little bit.
All right. You know?
Did you not like it?
I did not enjoy it as much as the last episode.
Oh, interesting. I can't remember what the last episode was.
It was the Betazoids and the Vulcan.
Oh right. Oh, and Boimler, he does this whole thing where he just gets hooked on Ferengi television.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Terrible Ferengi television.
Yeah. Well, and yeah. I liked how they even like treated that as a growth moment for him. You know, like he was like, I am so sorry, you know, and Ransom was like, don't, you know, you got out of your own way.
Yeah. And I like that he already sent somebody to go get him.
Yeah.
But if just go limp, let him take you. Yeah. Don't fight it.
It actually reminded me of Ted Mosby's like fantasy scene of how to properly quit when everybody was pretending to be Marshall. And he said something, you know, and then his boss was like, I appreciate you saying that. And he's like, really? He's like, yeah, that way we don't have to pay you. Security's going to rough you up a little bit.
So not really a Star Trek episode or a proper Star Trek episode. I don't think, what's novel about this at all.
Right.
Nothing.
Oh, okay.
Nothing.
Right. What's novel about this, Jonathan? I'll tell you, nothing.
Well, I guess we got a little bit of, exploration into the culture of the Ferengi that they have television.
Right. That's true. Yeah. In no way is that sci-fi, and in no way is that novel.
Right. And it seems to be just Earth television with Ferengi. There's nothing interesting. Other than it's like worse, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like more common denominator.
Well, and it was kind of like, look at how backwards the Ferengi are. You know, that like we have shows very similar to this, and Starfleet is way past this in the future.
Right. It kind of begs the question, though, do we still have terrible sitcoms in the future? A little bit? That we just don't see because nobody watches them?
Right.
You're right. Like, it's not really science fiction at all.
No. Yeah. You're right, too, yeah. Since you were the first one to say it.
Well, I was saying that it was science fiction that they have television. I realized that was stupid. I should have thought of that.
Yeah. It's all right.
Okay. Well, next week, what are we watching? Is it Lower Decks?
It is.
Again?
Yep. And it is season 3, episode 8, A Few Badgies More.
Oh, I think it's season
4,
Three
computerized villains return to cause problems for the Cerritos crew.
Oh, see, this is sounding like we're ramping up to the end.
Right. But how interesting would it be if, like, this is not the big revelation? This is like the twist that these villains are actually in no way connected to that ship. Like, I would be blown away.
That would be interesting. That'd be nice if they did that.
Yeah.
It's just a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or it just disappears. We can never see the ship again, like we had originally formulated.
Right. Yeah.
But no, I want there to be a big blow up. They've been seeding this forever. So let's make it big. Let's make it worth it.
Mm-hmm.
What was the name of the episode again?
A Few Badgies More.
Oh, so badgie. So
yeah. But that also makes me wonder if there is an episode like A Fistful of Badgies. I don't think there is, but it would be amazing if there is. It's kind of frustrating because they did A Fistful of Datas and they never did A Few Datas More. And now we have A Few Badgies More, but we don't have A Fistful of...
Oh, maybe that's the reference. Yeah, maybe you're right.
Right.
Good call.
I was always disappointed by that. Well, like that they did that episode. I mean, it was definitely a bottle episode. Like it wasn't designed to lead anywhere, but... the fact that they called it a fistful of datas to me heavily implied that there should have been a few datas more.
I'm sure they had the idea. It was in somebody's back pocket.
Right.
Well, we'll find out.
That's true.
Picard season 4.
Well, so
I've been Paul.
I've been Jonathan.
And this has been The Measure of an Episode.
But you already knew that.
Is that a Ferengi getting a root canal?